Welcome to our Wednesday special meeting, September 16th, 2020. Just a quick, I heard a few people, but mute your volume so nobody can hear your little breathing, I guess I want to say. Heavy breathing, first thing, get going. Okay. Again, the board secretary, Jennifer Flores, will be calling roll for votes on the action items, and please send any questions you would like to have read aloud to the district, or you can call in and join via the links that are attached to the agenda packet. If we could please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, we can get started. Thank you. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Okay, we will start with the roll call. Jennifer, please.
Director Kwiatkowski?
Present.
Director Mora?
Present.
Director Armstrong will be absent. Director Edwards?
Present.
Director Swan?
Present.
Four directors present with one absent.
And we would like to approve the order of the agenda. Anybody have any comments?
I move that we approve the order of the agenda.
I'll second that motion. Jennifer?
I'm checking to see if anybody has any comment, which I am not seeing. So it's been seconded by Director Edwards. I'm sorry, it's been moved by Director Edwards, seconded by Director Kwiatkowski to approve the order of the agenda. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong is absent. Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
You're muted, Bob.
Again, aye.
The motion carries to approve the order of the agenda.
Okay, and we will open now to public comments. Members of the public, you're appreciated for taking the time to attend this meeting or view it via the internet and provide comments on matters of district business. Public comments are subject to a 3-minute time limit, 10 minutes on an individual topic. Although no action can be taken on the items not listed on the agenda, please know we are listening carefully to your comments. Jennifer, do we have any?
Yes, I believe we have Kay Crow, who I will unmute now, who we received an email from that she stated she'd like to make a public comment under non-agendized items.
Welcome.
Hold on. Is not unmuting.
Hello?
Yep, we can hear you.
Yes, welcome.
Okay. Hi, okay. So in my 3 minutes here, I have a couple of comments. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, because you are all coming in very low. But anyhow, it is my understanding that any correspondence from a public agency to a member of the public regarding public agency business is subject to public records law. I received an email regarding an agenda item and the cover statement says it is confidential. Please, at maybe a later date, clarify how this complies with the Public Records Act. Okay, that's my first comment. My second comment is the agenda packet this month is 168 pages. It would be easier for everyone to read it if the district would add a link on the agenda to each item so those who want to review it, maybe 2 or 3 items, do not have to scroll through the entire agenda packet, making the agenda packet more user-friendly for anyone that wants to read it.
Okay. Were those your 2 items?
Those are my 2 items.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for calling. We appreciate your comments.
Someone will get back to me with the answer on my first comment.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else, Jennifer?
Not seeing anything. So not everybody is showing up on the screen. We have a lot of participants. So I will say if there are any members of the public who would like to make a comment, to send something into the chat so I can recognize you, because I'm not seeing any indication of any other further public comment.
Real quickly, while we're waiting a moment, if we can add the page numbers to the agenda for each item, I find that very helpful when I go through and add it to my agenda. I've got every page number listed, and I usually read it aloud at the beginning of each item so people know where to go. If people could refer to that, it would help not having to have the link, I think.
I'm not seeing any further public comment.
Okay, all right. We will close public comment and open item 3, information items and proclamations. And we will start with staff reports. Fire department report. I see Andy Murphy, welcome. You are muted, Andy. There you go.
All right, you hear me okay?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
As you mentioned, my name is Andy Murphy. I'm the Assistant Fire Chief, and I wanted to go over the monthly report. So there's a couple of incidents that are highlighted in the written report that's attached. And then I wanted to speak briefly about the mock fire also. But first of all, on August 17th, 14,000 lightning strikes started and then continued over the next couple of days throughout California, mainly from Big Sur up into the Northern California along the coast, and then came inland, starting over 350 fires, of which 29 became 29 major fires, which there are still 28 major fires burning today to some degree. Most of them are nearly contained. And then a few days after that, on the 20th of August, the mock fire started down at Marshall's Flat Road and Highway 49. So we always say in the business that you never want to be the last large fire, but we were. So we still managed to, with the cooperation of fire departments from throughout the county and throughout California, and even had resources from Arizona and New Mexico on the mock fire, contained the fire to 2,800 acres, which is pretty, really, I don't say amazing, but it was a good job by those guys. They did one day alone, they did a 15,000 foot hose lay and some of the steepest, most dangerous terrain in Tuolumne County, and they managed to contain the fire. Of course, something that's been a comment and commented on and somewhat of a concern by some of the constituents in the county was the evacuations of Groveland and the greater Groveland area. Of course, we see since then how fast some of these fires have moved, and even back in 2017 and 18, how fast some of these fires have moved. A reminder is on the north complex fire in Plumas and Butte County that moved 20 miles in one night through the timber. So that is something that we're always thinking of, and the early and evacuations of the public is very important. We don't want people running for their lives with fire on both sides of the road. So that's something the sheriff, working closely with the sheriff, we certainly want to avoid. And that went off very well as far as the execution of the evacuations. And fortunately, the fire was contained, like I said, to 2,800 acres. So speaking of the large fires, you know, we're all suffering through the smoke throughout most of California. And There's still today over 16,000 firefighters on the front lines battling, like I said, those 28 major fires. Just in the last 24 hours in California, there have been over 30 new fires. All the new fires were contained. So this is, it's still, you know, we're still really in the very serious part of the fire season, especially for the Groveland area and that elevation where the timber is certainly, along with all the other fuels at the lower elevations, is ready to burn. So we just encourage the public to keep fire safe and pay attention to their surroundings as far as wildfires. As far as the equipment, we did get engine 783, the new to the district fire engine. Was a Cal Fire surplus engine the district picked up this summer. There's still some other repairs to be made to it, and we hope to have it in service within the next few weeks. It's a 1996 International Model 15. And as far as the incidents, let me go to the defensible space inspections. Those will be wrapping up pretty soon from the California Fire Foundation grant. The inspectors have so far completed over 184 inspections, and they're doing second inspections and follow-up inspections. That was a $15,000 grant, the same one that the county received. It's been very well received. Incidents, as is shown, 65 incidents in the month of August, which is fairly busy for the station. The five-year average is 55 calls in the month of August, so we're up above average. Of those 65 incidents, 58 were in the district and 7 were outside of the district in the county area. And year to date, they responded to 401 incidents. And last year at this time, the engine had responded to 391 incidents. And so that's the end of my report. You're muted still.
Hey, Andy.
Yeah.
This is Pete. I just wanted to make sure that we appropriately express our appreciation to everyone there. Yourself, your staff, throughout the county and obviously statewide, and unprecedented times. I appreciate the communication that you had with me throughout the event, and your candor. You know, it was, it's not always easy to try to make predictions on what things are going to do, but very important when we're all making decisions and trying to keep people safe and informed. And, I think you guys did obviously a very fantastic job. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll pass that on. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Assistant Chief Andy Murphy. We're all clapping for you. And the firehouse looks wonderful. I bet you guys love driving up to it every day. You can't get lost in Groveland.
Yeah, lots of comments on it. It's a fabulous.
Yes, it does. It looks really good. Okay. Were there any public comments, Jennifer? Okay, we will move on to the general manager's report.
Make sure I'm not muted. I'm not even going to belabor this just because the majority of everything that I've been working on over the last month to 6 weeks is coming to discussion on this agenda. And so just want to get to those items. Those are the important things. Included in your packet, concerning item with some of the Prop 68 funding. We were really looking strongly at what's called the Rural Recreation and Tourism Grant Program. I've included a comment letter in the packet that we sent because they went out for comments on their program guidelines 3 different times. The intent of this portion of the funding under Prop 68 was to build some really cool things in rural communities that were under 50,000 in population, in counties under 500,000 in population, to enhance tourism revenue, economy, and build long-lasting recreational features that tied tourism and recreation together. Groveland has a perfect opportunity in a number of our projects, and we fit every single criteria. And that was, we were looking to that program to be a big source of a funding for our trailhead tie into the Resilience Center, and also some additional stuff we'll talk about today. But the dilemma is there was a lot of pressure in promulgating the regulations to increase the population size to allow some of these shoulder communities, and we can all imagine who they are. They're counties that are still less than 500,000, but have large communities in them of over 50,000. So they're trying to move that requirement up to, I believe, 80,000 was the recommendation. I don't think our comment is going to do anything. I think they'll stick with the 80,000. It doesn't kill it. It just makes it more. It means that somebody has an idea that they're going to come in and suck up the majority of that 25 million with a project or two. And so anyway, it just makes it much more competitive. That was really all I wanted to touch on with that. But we've got some more exciting stuff to talk about.
Okay. Thank you, Pete. Any director comments? Okay. Public comments? All righty. We will move on to item 3.3.3, operations manager report, Louie, and that is on page 11. Welcome, Louie.
Welcome. Good morning, everybody. Let me see here. I just want to start. I know it's coming up here in a minute, but I want to give a shout out to staff for during the mock fire. They did a great job of keeping this place going and juggling, you know, keeping their families safe off the hill. So it was really good to see everybody come together on that. And I want to give kudos to Andy and Jude and all of Cal Fire for what they did, getting phone calls and text messages just to make sure that GCSD and their families were good. Is that's good stuff. And that's this shows what we got going here is just amazing. So I want to say thank you to them. And then I'll get into my report. We had a couple really big projects. The main one I really want to push forward right there is the Lift Station 5 sewer line that we had repaired by Moyle Construction. That was a really scary moment when we had the lines camered for the inspection after our sewer spill. Now, they located this problem right at the right where it goes into the lift station. Ooh, and so all the flow comes down from one certain side of that, the lake there, and comes into that manhole or into that lift station. And then that could have been a really bad scenario of something solid got in there, any kind of debris, grease, roots, whatever it may be, it would definitely spilled. So that was a good find. It was a big project. It ended up being about 24 feet of sewer line replaced. And they had to dig around our existing utilities and everything. So it was an ordeal for them, but they did a great job and got it fixed. And we don't have any more couplings like that one in the picture there. They did solid pipe. And so it's good. Let me see here. We had a couple AC units put in at some of our main, at the main water treatment plants. And that's to help keep some of our electrical components nice and cool. We were having some problems with heating, and so the old units just weren't working anymore. So the new units are actually been great. Staff has said they're, you know, they've been shutting on or coming on, shutting off, and they're working like they should. So that's a plus for us as well. Let me see here. And then Greg really wanted me to highlight the OSG unit there at the STP plant. We had the reps for those units come out. Oh, go ahead, Janice.
What is the STPOSG?
It's the sewer treatment plant on-site chlorine generator.
Okay.
So no problem. We had the reps come out. And they actually gave us some recommendations, and we followed those recommendations. And after doing so, there was an initial cost to it,
mm-hmm.
but you can see the savings that we're going to have if we keep running this unit like this and do the routine maintenance that they recommended. So that yeah. was huge in 1 month. So Greg really wanted to highlight that there and hopefully we can cut down some costs across the board going that direction. So other than that, that's pretty much it. Do you guys have any questions?
I did. I see that we had 31 rereads. That's kind of high. Is it because the water rate increase?
No, that is we had somebody fill in to read meters. We had the meter reader out and then also do some audits that just had some high usage and stuff in there that were from irrigation stuff. So,
okay, that's all. That was it. Any other director comments at this time? Jennifer?
Just a remark that it was interesting to see that the comparison with last year, the commercial usage is way down, but the residential usage is actually slightly up, which simply confirms the fact that we've had a whole lot of note up here.
Yep. Yes, some people think it hasn't been too busy, but it's packed. It really is. And they're just staying at their houses. That's what they're doing. So
that's a good thing. That's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
But it should be nice if everything was open and people could leave their houses. It would be great. Okay. Thank you, Louie.
Thank you. Good report. A lot going on.
Yes. Okay, we will go to 3BI, and I'm sorry, Administrative Service Manager's Report. Jennifer, I always skip past that because you don't have a page in the packet.
Okay, so lots of stuff going on in admin. One of the biggest things that we have going on right now is our Springbrook upgrade, which everybody's been well aware of. So one of the things that you will notice are that we've decided to do, the direction we've taken as a district after careful consideration, was we have decided to migrate to the cloud version of Springbrook. Currently, it's hosted on our own on-site server. And there's a number of reasons why we decided to go ahead with the cloud version. One being in the current environment that we are with remote working, the district staff cannot access Springbrook in a way that's conducive to what they need to get done. We have to remote into a computer that's on site at the district, and it's a very not user friendly. The timing takes the lag time, because it's communicating with everything that's coming from the district sides, the connectivity, and then you have to have the connectivity at the employee's home. And so billing and processes of getting into Springbrook have just taken a really, really, really long time. And so it's been one of those things that we've come to realize that is not going to work very well in a remote working atmosphere. So, but there's a lot of really positives about moving to the cloud version. One of the big things is that it really eliminates a lot of our IT expense. When the server goes down, we're having to reset it. We have to call our IT person in. Our IT person then has to communicate with Springbrook's IT. And there's this really big disconnect of what's going on. And that happens a lot more frequently than we would like. And when Springbrook goes down, that's obviously the hub of everything that, you know, the district's from, you know, from utility billing to taking people's credit card payments. So we're really kind of stuck in, you know, the water when that happens. So with this, everything is based, you know, it's all cloud-based. So it's all on Springbrook's end. And they are constantly monitoring it and making sure that it's functioning. In addition, one of the risks that we have is that, you know, now moving to a cloud-based version, we won't have our server on site. And that's been something that's, it's a concern for the district, for our servers in general, just because if we had, let's say, a fire burn through and destroy the district and our servers, all of our information would be gone. And we, Steve, our IT person, has talked about having, you know, a backup server in an alternate location. So in case, you know, the water district burned down, we could house it in another place. But again, you know, if we had just a fire rage through and burn everything, there's that vulnerability there. So those are, and then one of the other really nice things about it is that we don't have to upgrade again. As being part of the cloud, it just happens automatically. It's part of your enhancement. So this whole process of being stuck, and then we have to go through and look at what the new version of Springbrook is, so that can then be downloaded on our server, that doesn't happen anymore. That goes away. So that's really nice, because going through this migration process, this is my second one, and it's really time consuming, and there's a lot that goes into it. A lot of our custom codes that we have developed in Springbrook for things that, that Springbrook doesn't do automatically, a lot of these come with the cloud-based version. So like one of the things that I have to do frequently is they have these service packs. So in order to, it's kind of like upgrade and get all the new bells and whistles that Spring, because Springbrook's constantly improving. Well, that doesn't happen to us unless I go through and request the service pack. And then we have to, everybody has to be off work, and it's usually after hours that this gets downloaded and upgraded and installed. So it really eliminates a lot of the work on GCSD's part, and really, and a lot of some of the expense, especially with regard to like IT. Now, with that said, they're obviously to migrate over to the cloud-based version was $10,000 more, but that's because we are switching to a whole different program and we're having to pay that initial cost. And then in addition to that, annual maintenance goes up about $5,600 annually to be on the cloud-based version. Now, again, there's a lot that we're getting with that. We don't have any IT anymore. We don't have to worry about having a server that we're paying for that's being upgraded and updated on a continuing basis. So that's kind of my spiel about what's going on with Springbrook right now. So we're in the process of bringing that on board right now. So I don't know if anybody has any questions specific to that, but I can answer them after, but I've got a couple of other items in my report that I'm going to talk about. Okay.
Travis, can you please mute your microphone? Just a quick reminder, anybody phoning in or logging in, we'd like you to mute, please. Thank you very much. Good morning, Travis. Hi.
Okay. Another thing, we just recently submitted the grant for the COVID-19 related expenses incurred for the FEMA grant. Rachel has been tracking those expenses for a while now. So hopefully, a lot of the guidelines of the grant, the stuff that we've done doesn't necessarily seem like it qualifies for reimbursement, but we submitted grants anyways. So she submitted that the day before yesterday. So that's in there. We also, Rachel also applied for the SDRMA safety reimbursement for $1,000. And we received that, which is going to go ahead and take care of our frost testing for the guys to get fit tested. We had the audit happen last week, so that is done, and we should be hearing back from them shortly. I know we've got the management communication letter that is working on with our CPA, Gilbert and Associates, and we have just recently filled our vacant maintenance mechanic position. So that person, they have not started yet with the district, but they're going through the new hire process. And we are also, we have flown the vacant collections and distribution position and are starting to receive applications for that position as well. And then the last thing I would like to touch upon is just, I really want to thank, admin staff, but specifically Rachel. I went on a 2-week vacation, and it's been the first time I've taken 2 weeks off consecutively since like 2013. And it was really, really nice, because for the first time, I did not come back to a pile of, when you get back, this is what needs to be done. And I'm just really proud of her, and she's working really, really hard, and she deserves to be recognized because she's her growth and how far she's come. She's a huge asset to the district, and I'm very fortunate to have her on our team. And then I know I sent it out to the board, but Megan Orsetti of staff, she also received a really, really nice letter from a member of the public, a customer who she assisted. And so it's always nice. We don't get, you know, enough of those. So I just want to recognize her as well. And I'm done.
I want to add what a great job Rachel did on this side of the platform. We missed you, Jennifer, but Rachel was right on the ball all the time. It was great. You did wonderful training with her. You're welcome.
No doubt. Yeah. I heard you use the butt word, but Rachel did a really good job. We missed you, but, and that's.
That makes me happy. That's what I'd like. It's a lot. It means a lot to me. It means we're doing something right. So.
Yeah. It's yes. Fantastic. It just was absolutely seamless. I would also like to add, because I know we have a number of Tuolumne County folks on the line as well, that in June we received $18,000 from the county through their allocation from OES related to the PSPS program of PG&E. The county received an allocation from the state budget and allocated a portion of that to districts because there was no funding in that budget directly to special districts. It went to cities and counties, and the county was gracious enough to provide funding to Twain Hart CSD, Groveland CSD, and TUD equally from their appropriation. And so we received an $18,000 check toward the generator replacement at Tank 4 at the airport. So that's much appreciated as well.
Okay, any other comments regarding Jennifer's report? I'm really glad to hear that you've gone to the cloud with the spring book. It's good, you guys are gonna love it. It's gonna be great. Any public comments?
Not seeing any.
Okay, we will move on to item 3B, which is proclamations. And I believe, Spencer, are you going to be?
I can, yeah. I'm really not prepared to do this, but it's not going to take much preparation.
Okay.
During the mock fire, you know, we were all evacuated. The power's gone out. Smoky. It's hot. Everything is very, very much uncomfortable. And what a lot of the public doesn't see are the distribution and collection system operators, the operations guys, the admin folks, the leadership, the managers, and first line supervisors are all still coming in to work. And the water that goes into their taps and coming out of their kitchen sink, and it's going out through their sewer system, it's all still got to be taken care of. And these men and women did just that. And it was just a matter of course. It was just, that's what they did. I mean, it wasn't something that they considered individually to be special, but I do consider it special because not only were they taking care of their families, and which should always come first to all of us, but they were taking care of their jobs here and their duties here at the Water District. And I have been associated with some pretty wild outfits in my day. And this is one of the very best I've seen. Not a hiccup. Nothing. Not a hiccup. Generators are going south on us. We've got things happening at lift stations. Louis pulling his hair out. He's only got two people. Somebody had to go to the doctor. And Not a hitch. And that says more about the staff than they can ever say about themselves. I started talking with Janice and Pete about this kind of thing, and there's some certificates of recognition, and Janice made a big point and a very valid point about a certificate of achievement as opposed to a certificate of recognition. Well, we are recognizing these people and how much we value what they do here every day. Every day. And they don't let anything stop them. That applies to those firefighters, too, that are out there right where the fire meets the grass. And that applies to them. They are all right out there sacrificing a lot. And they're not home with their families like I have the privilege of being. They're out there making sure that 2G is running and the sewer treatment plant is running operation. I'm proud of them. Now, I think there's some certificates that you want to hand out, don't you, Janice?
Yes.
And thank you to every one of you guys in maintenance, operations, admin staff, the first line supervisors, and the management system. You guys have created, in some cases, a perfect storm, but I don't think it's really a storm. I think it's a perfect situation where people take ownership of their job. Well done to all you guys. Go ahead, Janice. I'm sorry.
Yes, well said, Spencer. And now I'm going to read these. These are all certificates of recognition. We're going to be signing and giving to these team players, part of the team at GCSD. Certificate of recognition. This certificate of recognition is awarded to Adam Allsweet. In recognition of your dedication and dependability to ensure the reliability of services provided to the Groveland Community Service District, to the community we serve, we hereby award this certificate for your outstanding performance during the mock fire emergency, August 20th, 2020 through August 25th, 2020. Thank you for your service. Now I'm going to continue with just naming the participants that are receiving this, please. We have one for Louis Melchor. We have one for Greg Dunn, the operations, we've got operations manager and the plant manager. Andrew Marshall, Albert DeShays, Anthony Truillo, Tony Filippi, Steve Bowie, Ronnie Lynn Borrego, and Bob Asquith.
If I may say something, Janice, may I?
Yes, absolutely.
In regards to Ronnie Lynn and Bob Asquith, I do believe, I cannot remember GCSD ever giving a certificate of recognition to one of their constituents. Is anybody that's been here a while, have we ever done that before? Does anybody know? Well, it's justifiable at this point with Bob Asquith. Ronnie Lynn, and now let me combine these two people, because what those guys did, Ronnie and Bob, is they kept accurate, timely information flowing in social media. So many times social media is abused. It's, the water district didn't do this, they didn't do that, I can't get a drink of water, whatever, you know, and people are complaining, and rightfully so. They have the right to free speech, and I'll defend that to my dying day. Ronnie and Bob put out accurate, timely information that was, it wasn't just hearsay, it wasn't just, I think it was accurate information and greatly appreciated. Ronnie, thank you, ma'am. Bob, thank you, sir. You gave us good information and I appreciate that. That's very, very hard to find in those kind of emergency situations. Thanks again.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much. And let's give a round of applause to everybody at the district. Yay. Thank you very much. Okay.
If you'd like to make, I saw her hand up.
Yes, please.
I would like to just, because we're in a meeting, I didn't know it was an emotion, but I second everything that Spence just said with Ronnie and Bob. As I was reading just one thing saying yes and the other thing saying no, I literally would just scroll till I found one of Bob's posts. It was like the most accurate information. And it's not even just now. It's always.
All the time.
It's like, okay, here Bob's coming on it. I'll just read that one and call it good. Thank you very much.
Yes. I agree. Thank you. Bob fills a lot of shoes, Mr. Asquith, and we appreciate you. Okay, let's move on to the consent calendar, please. Consent items are considered routine and will be acted upon by one motion. There will be no separate discussion on these items unless a member of the board, staff, or member of the public requests specific items to be set aside for separate discussion. Do we have any questions by the directors? No, okay. Do we have any public comment? Oh yes, Spencer.
I was going to move that we approve the consent calendar.
I'll second that motion, please. Any public comments? None at this time, okay. Jennifer, please take roll.
Been moved by Director Edwards, seconded by Director Kwiatkowski to approve the consent calendar. I will now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong is absent. Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
And the motion carries 4 in favor and 1 absent.
Thank you. We will go on to the next item, which is old business, and we don't have any. Everything we have is new today. And item 6A, adoption of a resolution approving 4020, approving a revised conflict of interest policy in accordance with the Political Reform Act.
Okay. I'll introduce this. We won't dwell a whole lot on this item. But I do want to tell you that a big chunk of your 100 and however many page packet we had was our old existing conflict of interest policy, as it was with our policy format that is basically from back in 2010. This particular policy is extremely lengthy and cumbersome and covers a lot of ground that is already included in the law and not really necessary to restate with the policy. We requested a simpler version of the policy from our district council, and this is the draft form that was provided for consideration. And as you can see, it makes reference to California law and other requirements associated with the conflict of interest laws. And then there is a section on designated employees and disclosure categories for members of the board. This is for filing the Form 700, members of the board, secretary of the board, attorney and consultants. And there's a statement about consultants on which consultants would be required to submit the Form 700. And that is the recommendation, is that the new revised policy be approved. The one that is included in the packet, the lengthy one, conflict of interest code, that starts with section 1 definitions after the new proposed policy would be rescinded with this action.
Yes, Bob.
Okay, so I have, a couple of questions. First comment is I'm always happy to see us change things that refer to public law to include it by reference where possible, because it means that it'll stay up to date. The question is, how come the general manager isn't on the designated people? I mean, you certainly participate in forming decisions. I assume the attorney left it off. It was on the one, and as far as I know, it's on SDRMA. The CEO is on SDRMAs. Why would the
general manager? No, definitely. It may be because they were still assuming that I was in the consulting role, but definitely. So let's make that amendment. I'm sorry about that.
And then the other, so I had, this is, this is just for future, the next time something, we seem the current, the proposed version is certainly practically, you know, I'm wondering if we wouldn't have some, want to have some sort of plain language, you know, didn't read kind of summary of what it actually says. I mean, fundamentally, what the public, I went and looked at the CCNR or the CCR thing, and, you know, it's basically just the requirement to file Form 700s. I mean, when, you know, what almost all of those to do with explaining what has to be on those forms. So, I mean, perhaps in our policy, we could include some vision that, you know, something in plain language that just says, this is what's really required here is that you all need to file a Form 700.
And you might be able to tell by my face, I'm intensely looking to see how that was addressed in our existing policy, but there's a lot of language to weed through there. Is that something that you're proposing that we make an amendment to this at this time? Or
No, because we have to file this thing before the 1st of October, and it certainly is another meeting to talk about a revised version. I was saying, make a note maybe the next time we do it, or you don't have to wait 2 years to do a revision. Just for clarity to the people that are supposed to comply, just so that it just says in English, by the way, what this means is do this.
We'll send it out with our transmittal, Bob. How's that? If we send it,
yeah, it's not
send it out to those that are required. We'll send the revised policy, assuming that it's approved, and we'll put it in the transmittal letter and have that.
That'll work fine. I'm just thinking it's just the way it is right now. While it's also practically unintelligible, unless you go read the CCR 18, whatever the heck it is.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Any other directors have any comments at this time? Okay, we will get back on that page. I would like to make a motion to adopt the resolution 40-2020 approving a revised conflict of interest policy in accordance with the Political Reform Act.
And that would be
I'll second that, but we did agree that you're going to add the general manager, right?
Yes, add the general. I wanted to mention he's on the appendix, page 55. Just one at page 7.
The general manager is on the appendix of the prior policy.
Okay. We don't have.
So the general manager will be added to the positions disclosing.
Okay.
The current policy.
Will we have an appendix to this, adding the district engineer? Any of those people? Do they need to?
They're an independent consultant.
And okay, gotcha.
They'll fall under the consultant's line there.
Okay, Bob seconded that with the addition. Yes. Okay, Jennifer, would you like to take the roll? Was there any other public comment at this time, Jennifer?
No.
Okay. We're ready for the roll call. You're muted, Jennifer.
I guess my space bar feature isn't working. Okay, let's do this again. It has been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Swan, to adopt resolution 40-2020 approving a revised conflict of interest policy in accordance with the Political Reform Act. As amended to include the general manager. I now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong is absent. Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
And the motion carries, 4 in favor with 1 absent.
Okay, item 6B. Provide additional direction to staff and or accept fiscal impact analysis regarding Groveland CSD fire and emergency response services provided to areas outside of the district boundaries, including the new land development projects.
Make sure I'm unmuted. I wanted to let you know that we have Blair Oz with SCI Consulting, who's with us as well for this meeting, and we'll be discussing the attachment that was sent out last night. But I want to introduce this topic, and I'm going to bring my brain back to agenda item 4D, which was the agreement with SCI. And a lot of that, the narrative that's contained within that staff document, within the submittal for that item, is relevant to this discussion because it explains how we got where we are, and documents the fact that we're at a point now where we really need to know what that fiscal impact is on the fire department of the district by increasing the number of calls and also responding to additional calls outside of the district boundaries. If you'll remember, and we'll talk about in a near future agenda item today, we have our statutory district boundaries that wherein we receive property taxes from property owners within that district boundaries. Then we have the area outside of the district boundaries in a couple locations that we've agreed to respond under the automatic mutual aid agreement with the county fire departments in Tuolumne County. And that is the primary response area outside of the district boundaries for the district department. Then there are also responses even outside of that mutual automatic aid response boundary out to approximately the national park boundary on Highway 120 and areas in that vicinity off of the highway there. We are seeing a significant increase in population load, completely and not necessarily related to the lodging facilities, but also just in general, just people coming up, getting away from the city, going to the park, visiting natural locations. You're seeing parking lots and parking areas for the recreational facilities in our area be absolutely overwhelmed with people right now. And what that does is it causes an increased risk and calls fire. Right now, we are the only fire department located on the Highway 120 corridor that responds to calls when they come into 911. That doesn't mean that the ambulance doesn't respond or that the Forest Service doesn't respond. But when dispatched, we are the primary entity. We are the go-to entity as the first in responder for fire and emergency services, basically from Moccasin to the park boundaries, because we are the only entity staffed and available at this time. A lot of that has to do with the demise of the volunteer fire services in the past. There were county volunteer fire stations that had staff that were available to be able to respond to supplement the district staff. Those are no longer, and the volunteer fire services are, especially in rural areas such as ours, it's very difficult to get people to commit to that and keep a volunteer fire staff on. So, in summary, getting back to the purpose for this evaluation and the numbers that have been prepared by Blair, 2 years ago, I began looking at the data related to the calls because there were a significant number of calls that we were responding to and a significant amount of time that we were spending on calls outside of the district boundaries. And the concern there being that that leaves us short to no resources within the district. So planning for the future, the remedy for that is to increase staffing, increase equipment. And there are many things that impact and influence that need to be able to, that need to increase the staffing. And part of that is growth in tourism and, you know, commercial entities, traffic on the highway, just what I talked about early on. So I've been planning and working with, you know, with the county staff, working with our fire department staff and internally and also a number of times with the board to determine how we address the impact to our fire department by continuing to see responses outside the district boundaries. The county also has a couple of projects that are in their under their consideration. There are two additional resort lodging projects in Terravee Lodge and Under Canvas. Those collectively, you can see in the agenda document, would add a number of new rental units within what is currently the district response area. So recognizing that early on in the process of the counties working through the planning with these applicants, we requested that a fire impact study be performed to determine what the level of impact was on district services and what could be done to supplement the district so that there was no impact on our existing residents, on our ability to be able to provide service within the district. The EIR's environmental impact reports were issued, they were reviewed. We've had discussions with the county, with the board, and with legal counsel about the way that the EIR's addressed potential impact to the fire department services. And that has transitioned into discussions about community facilities districts, potential funding means for new development projects to contribute a proportional share of cost to increased responses. That led us to discussions with the county about how we get that done, and the county has been diligently requesting that we provide some numbers. If the numbers that were in the EIR were not correct or not acceptable, what is the number that is related to this impact? Normally, this would be something that we would expect to work through with the county and the developer, potentially through a community facilities district where the developer and county identified the impact for the community facilities district creation. However, we didn't get there with the county yet, and they're at a point where they need to finalize their staff documents for approval of the EIR or consideration of the EIR for both projects. So I felt it necessary to move that financial evaluation forward and worked with Blair and his firm SCI, who have a lot of experience with that, to move that discussion forward and get to where we are. That was a lot of English right there. So I'm going to take a drink of water. We've been working on this draft financial portion of the evaluation, and I'd like for Blair to walk you through that, if we could.
Great. Thank you, Pete, and good morning, board members. Again, Blair Oz with SCI Consulting Group, and I'm pleased to be with you again this morning. What's before you is the fiscal, it's a project-specific fiscal impact analysis. And because we're talking about projects that are outside the boundaries of the district, they're not subject to the district doesn't receive any property tax revenue or any other revenue. Largely, this fiscal impact analysis is an analysis of the impact on the department, and it's an allocation of the fire department's annual costs. So we have the on the first sheet here is the determination of reoccurring of fire expenditures. So the you know the first question in a fiscal impact analysis is what are the annual expenditures, and then you'd also do what are the annual revenues attributable to the project. But we know that that is nothing. So really, this is just an exercise in what are the annual costs and how to allocate, you know, what is the fair share allocation to these projects. So the spreadsheet before you is effectively the entire budget for this for the current fiscal year with three modifications. So it's essentially the budget. The Jones Hill fire break grants and associated expenditures in the budget. So that also in the budget there was not really a line item for replacement of your existing apparatus. The equipment, and so we looked to the department's master plan and found that the master plan calls for an annual of $257,000 to be able to adequately replace the fire system, the equipment and apparatus. And so that was one adjustment compared to not just pretty much a zero line item for capital improvements. And then lastly, as you know, the current budget calls for the Schedule A and the Amador contract to be based upon a staffing personnel. But that is that the current staffing level, and as Pete had talked about earlier, that it's actually the desire of the district to, and it's reflected in the master plan, to take that the optimal level of service would be 10 personnel. And so what's shown here is showing that higher level of service at 10 personnel. So the Schedule A contract in the current budget is about $1 million and shown in this budget is approximately $2 million. So that's really just the three adjustments that we made to this budget.
Blair, before we move off of this, as of this morning, Chief Murphy added a little bit to this equation. There is a new standard that apparently is associated with the issuance of new Schedule A agreements to when it comes to staffing an engine. The standard is 3 personnel versus 2 personnel. So when you talk about five people is what's required to keep 2 on an engine. So we may be looking at the added cost of with that 2.082 million increasing additionally at stage a revised agreement with Cal Fire. For the purpose of discussion now, let's continue on this way. I just wanted to bring that up, that looks like it might be a low number by one additional staff, which Andy, you may be able to add how many that adds in total, if you're still with us. Andy Murphy, you still on the line? Can you?
I am. So that was one additional position per seat. So what that means is there's 2 seats filled or expected to be filled. So that would be times 3. So 6 personnel for 1 engine. And that I'm just looking at that cost. It's about $185,000 additional for a position, approximately. Max cost.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Thank you. So that 2.082 could increase by that amount if that is the case on a Schedule A assessment with CAL FIRE.
Great. And then, Pete had mentioned that as part of the draft EIR for the Terra V project, that there was a fire impact analysis that was done. And just for comparison purposes, the annual reoccurring expenditures that was used in that analysis was $1.2 million, which was effectively only the department's cost, current costs for CAL FIRE. What's being shown here is rather than just having these new developments pay for their share of CAL FIRE costs, this is actually presenting an alternative that here's what their shares would be if it was of not only of the entire district budget, but the optimal budget, and then also an annual annual allocation to capital outlay. The Terra V project, the Terra V impact analysis in the draft EIR had $1.2 million, but then it also had a one-time contribution to capital improvements, and I think that was about $12,000. Where here we're having you consider instead of, and that would be what would be if this development project was in the boundaries of the district, and after you have your fire impact fee program established, which I know you're working on right now, they would be subject to a one-time charge of about $12,000 roughly. But here, just something to think about is that's just a one-time charge for capital improvements, their fair share to expand the fire system. But really, because we're talking about an annual revenue stream to contribute to the budget, it seems reasonable to just have them consider having them just pay for their fair share of annual replacement of the entire fire system as well. So that's why we have that reflected here. So if you move to the next page, this is the fiscal impact analysis. And it reflects the two development projects right now, Terra V Lodge and Yosemite Under Canvas. And then we have also included two projects that are already developed, but are, lodges that Pete had mentioned that are outside the boundaries of the district, but effectively are receiving the services of the department, which is Evergreen Lodge and Rush Lodge. So the basis of this analysis is what we call the demand factor is based upon annual services calls. And it's actually average annual services calls over a three-year period. And this is the same demand factor that was used in the fiscal impact analysis in the Terra V Lodge draft EIR. And some of these statistics are actually coming from that actual analysis. So there is consistency there. So you can see that that it indicates how many lodging accommodations or units or rooms there are at each one of these lodges. The district over a three-year period has been generating about 0.079 calls annually from every one of these rooms in the district. So that's a statistic that's based upon the last 3 years of the between the relationship, the service calls to Evergreen Lodge and Rush Creek Lodge. So that's a legitimate statistic. And so based upon that, we can get a good estimate of annually how many service calls should you expect from these four projects. And you see that there. And then we also know based upon total services calls that there's approximately 564 services calls per year. And again, that's a 3 year average, because you know some years are higher than lower, so you always want to use like a 3 year average. And then it shows the percent of all those calls that would be attributable to these projects. So it gives you an approximate sense as to of all the calls, how many calls are going to these projects, and you can see that here. So with that information, and then using the budget information on the prior sheet, the second and third column blocks are, the first one is based upon the current staffing level, which again, it's instead of at $2 million that we talked about, it'd be $1 million less, so $1.9 million. And then you can see approximately based upon that budget, your current staffing levels, that the cost attributable to these projects is reflected there. And then also we've calculated what the cost would be per unit, which comes up to about $263 per lodging unit. So that can serve. So then the third column, the third roadblock is the proposed staffing level that we talked about, and that might be just a little bit higher based upon the information we got from Andrew Murphy today. But you see the fiscal impact for each project, and then the fiscal impact for each lodging accommodation. So it goes from 263 to 407. So this analysis can give you a sense as to the relative impact of each one of these projects. What's their fair share of the department's current budget and optimal budget? And so this information could be used in future conversations with the county to either negotiate an annual share of the county TOT tax, which I know has been talked about, or as we've talked about before, this can serve as the basis for establishing a community facilities district on these four projects to pay these costs through an annual special tax. One other thing I'll note before I turn to questions. Again, all of this analysis is in $2,020, so it's in current dollars. And so, as you well know, and as reflected in the department's master plan, these annual expenditures will grow annually into the future, and so typically they are growing, and it's projected to grow by 5% per year. So I would recommend that any type of, if you're seeking a funding stream to mitigate these impacts from the county through the TOT or through the formation of a CFD, that there be a mechanism to increase this amount annually by 5% so that it accomplishes the special tax revenue or the TOT revenue accomplishes what it was intended to do, was to cover these costs, because we know these costs escalate by 5%. This revenue stream should increase by 5% as well. So I'd make that recommendation. But again, this gives you an order of magnitude. Lastly, just to compare with what was in the fire impact analysis for Terra V Lodge in the draft EIR, they were reflecting, 23,400 per year, and then a one-time payment of $11,000. So this is a little bit different. We're asking for, based upon current staffing levels, $38,000 a year or $59,000 a year, but then no one-time contribution. It would just be an annual contribution to the replacement of the department's fire system. So with that, I'll leave it there and take any questions.
This is not a terribly relevant comment, but I'm just going to throw it in. Planned lodging accommodation numbers are the rentable rooms, both Evergreen and I'm suspecting Terra V will have staff accommodations as well. There's a certain number of people that they keep out. I doubt that it has a significant impact on the numbers, but you know those are actually.
Yes, thank you, and good question. The reason that this is described as planned lodging accommodations is that it's not hotel, it's not lodging units. It's actually, if I recall correctly, these numbers also reflect, I think one of the projects had five lodging units that were actually used for employees. So that's actually added into these numbers. But yeah, again, that's an important, that's a distinction that can have a minor impact on the overall analysis. But yes, I believe that it is actually included.
You just Googled Rush Creek and they have 143 rooms for rent.
Okay.
You're right. It's minor. It's just a little, it's
okay, thank you. We can look at that. We can dig into that a little bit more to reflect that. But yeah, again.
Thank you, Kathleen. You had your hand raised.
Yeah, Blair. Thank you for this. It's it gives some numbers, paints a picture. But this is very small. But I'm just wondering why my calculations don't equal yours. I've been doing the based on current staffing levels. And so for Terra V, for example, if you times the number of accommodations times 263, I would think that you would come up with 38,429. But in each of these cases, I come up with less. And I just wondered what the discrepancy is.
I don't know, but I'd have to open up the spreadsheet to look. But yeah, it simply should be 38,429 divided by the total number of accommodations for that project.
Yeah, it works out to 38,398. And I'm just, and in each case, for all of the resorts, it comes up to just a little bit less. So anyway.
Well, I'd have to look into it. One of the things that we did not do was round the average service call so that you'd come up with a uniform statistic for the typical impact per lodging accommodation.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure among the board that it's understandable what we did here and what affects the two different budget amounts, why they're presented that way and how they're broken out, in a cost per unit for each of these facilities. Does everybody have a pretty good handle on how that plays out?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a very good analysis. It's quite clear. So thank you.
I have a question. Yes. I'm sorry, Bob Asquith, yes, please.
Two items. One, Blair, Rush Creek has accommodations for almost 100 people, employees on site. So that's a pretty big number. And one of the things about both draft EIRs for Under Canvas and TerraV is that both of them had way understated the need for that. There was an analysis about county lodging using the county's numbers that basically said that there'd be room for about 20 people in the Pine Mount Lake Groveland area, given the current vacancy rate. So both of those projects, the new projects, would have to include a lot more staff on site. The second thing is that I was on a conference call with the Under Canvas representative last week, and she indicated that they were going to give some money to GCSD, and you hadn't mentioned that. So I didn't know if that was something you didn't know about or just had been left off.
I wasn't aware of that, no.
But maybe Pete was going to collect the money and keep it.
No, let's not say that one. But Bob, just to address your comments, I think we're looking at this as a conceptual approach to this, understanding that both the budget amounts up on the part of the district fire department and things such as the planned lodging accommodations and their numbers will need to be solidified through conversations with the project applicants and the county as well. Because those things would need to be confirmed and solidified and land on a number that works.
Well, thank you for doing this. I mean, I look at it from the standpoint here with some family members that have been in emergency services for years. I pay a couple of different fees to get ambulance and fire service here. And the last thing I want to be is the second 911 call in Pine Mountain Lake.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question. If maybe Assistant Chief Andy or the other, I know that there's another fire chief, I'm sorry, I don't have your name, that's on the, at the meeting. In Rainbow Pools this summer alone, I think we had 3 or 4 emergency calls out there. And that has nothing to do with the lodgings up the hill, or yeah. However, those emergency calls took the fire department out of Groveland and out of the boundaries and out of commission for any residents that are paying property tax to have this service. So were we covered by another fire department? Did we bring up someone off the hill to stand in at Groveland while these emergency calls were out of the boundaries?
So I don't know. This is Andy Murphy. I don't know the exact number of calls. I know there have been several up there, as there are every year, not just at Rainbow Pool, but throughout the many wonderful recreational opportunities up the Highway 120 corridor. I don't, again, I'd have to do some research, and I can do that today, but the number of times that the Groveland District engine responded versus the CAL FIRE engine out of Merrill Road would be the question. I know a couple incidents that I can think of were the CAL FIRE engine, but I don't know specifically how many times the Groveland District engine responded. But they do share the responses up the hill, and we do historically try to keep the Type 1 within the district boundaries if the CAL FIRE engines are there. That's obviously not always the case.
Okay.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Good morning. This is Nick Cashy. I'm the unit chief for CAL FIRE, also Tuolumne County, and the GCSD fire chief working with Andy Murphy. With what Andy's saying in regards to the CAL FIRE engines during the fire season, that augmentation of resources by the state out of our CAL FIRE station works together with the district in regards to all types of calls. So part of that countywide auto aid agreement is the fact that we have the ability to have some dynamics in what calls get what engines, as well as the fact that we have the ability to move other engines up to cover if it's going to be extended. So those operational type decisions are usually based on a case-by-case basis off the battalion chief in charge or the recommendations of our command center to ensure that the county's covered. During extreme drawdown like we're seeing right now, there's limited resources, not only in the county, but the entire state. So we have to try to plug those holes with the CAL FIRE engines throughout two counties to represent, you know, for fire response. So that's always a dynamic, but for the most part, under normal conditions, Groveland CAL FIRE should have an engine there and should be providing either secondary response. I mean, if we're fully staffed, there's three fire engines in Groveland, two state and one district, that are available to respond to any types of calls. So just the fact that it's a second 911 does not necessarily mean that you're not getting a fire engine in the same time frame. It just means it might be coming from the CAL FIRE station versus the GCSD facility. So there's a lot of ins and outs in regards to response plans and what engine goes where and time durations, but operationally as a unit, we're always trying to make sure that we're providing the best coverage for the public, regardless of patch on the door. And there has been discussions about potentially moving engine 761 up on a cover assignment immediately should the district engine be pulled, and Chief Murphy can expand on that a little more in some of the preliminary discussions we've been having.
Thank you, Chief Nick. Kashi, appreciate that. Andy?
Yeah, so not too much more on that, but the idea is that the move up and cover would be, the thought, obviously the 108 corridor has more resources, not that it's, you know, overwhelming amount of resources, but that there's more resources along the 108 corridor. And so we've been discussing the potential of moving up one of the Type 1 engines up to Groveland, given that the Groveland district engine is either committed to a long-term incident, either in the district or out of the district in the county area, just to provide that additional response capability and the pumping capability of a Type 1 engine. So what it would look like is if the 781 responded up the hill, they would either automatically there'd be a move up, or the station company officer would request a move up. And they, as the 781 is going to that incident, say for example, Evergreen or Rush Creek, the Jamestown would be the likely closest engine to move up the hill to cover the station. And again, it could be a incident within the district as well. It's kind of part of the, you know, the cooperative relationship between the agencies and covering each other. I think this is one way to move towards, or we think this is one way to move towards filling that gap.
Thank you.
Can I just quickly, because we've got a number of related agenda items, and the discussion about the you know, the coverage and the operation is more suitable as we get into item, I think it was 6G, so a little bit further down the agenda. I want to make sure we focus back on the financial distribution, the budgets and the distribution of that cost, so that we can answer the question to the county of the fiscal impact.
Yes. Okay, were there any other director comments? No, direct. How about members of the public? Jennifer, we hear from anybody? No. Okay.
Go ahead. We have a number of Tuolumne County folks in their room on the line, and certainly this would be an opportunity if any of them wanted to address this issue. Mm-hmm. We can. I believe they can unmute themselves, right? If nothing else, can we hear back that, there we go.
Yeah.
All right.
Hi, Pete. Sorry. This is Quincy Yaley. Thanks. Yeah, we've been following along and we don't have any comments at this time.
Thank you.
Okay. I would like to, we're going to provide action, direction to the staff.
Would you like a recommendation just based on the conversation? I would like to continue to work with the county on the details of this evaluation and have Blair, I believe Blair, you were going to probably prepare a narrative to support this as well, or was this, okay.
Yes, I can.
And then we will, we'll work toward finalizing the budget numbers to make sure that we're accurately reflecting the current, which we are, and the proposed budget, and then finalizing the lodging accommodation numbers, just to make sure that we all have agreement. And when I say all, it's primarily between the district and the county on what they have, what they're expecting with those facilities. And that would be good direction. So just finalize the numbers on the accommodations and the budget numbers, and continue to work with the county on this.
So I will move that we receive and file the fiscal report, and that we direct staff to continue to work with the county on finalizing the numbers with a aim at looking at the correct accommodation levels, and in general proceeding to establish parameters for future negotiations with people outside the district.
I'll second that.
Okay, Jennifer, would you like to roll, please?
I just want to make sure we call for any further comment now that we have a motion and a second. Okay, I'm not seeing any. Pete, were you going to say something?
No, I was just going to say because we have a number of people on the line, I want to make sure that anybody that joined late knows that they have the opportunity to be able to comment on this agenda item and any of the upcoming agenda items before action is taken by the board. So if there's anyone that is online and monitoring, the board has made a motion and a second and they're getting ready to take action. If there's any additional public comment, unmute yourself and speak up.
Hey, this is Luke Evans. I hope you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm actually an environmental consultant for the Under Canvas project. And in looking through the board packet, I did not see the fiscal impact report that was just presented. Did I miss it? Or is that something else I can get? Can someone send that to me, or can I find that elsewhere?
That is available on the county's website associated with the EIR for Terravee Lodge. And okay. And if you can't find it there, I'm sure you can, but if you can't, I can also provide it to you by email.
It's in the draft EIR volume 2.
Okay.
For the Terravee project, way back 109, page 90 or something like that.
Okay, so this is the same study that was with the Terravee EIR. Okay, I understand now.
Right. So I think largely we're using it, for the most part, the same methodology. That the demand factor is the same. I think the district just has a question about what's the appropriate budget to base that impact on.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Okay, so it's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Mora. And unfortunately, Bob, that was a really long motion that I'm not going to be able to repeat verbatim. So as stated by Director Swan, that we will go back and listen to for purposes of the minutes. But I will now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong is absent. Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Yeah, aye. And I'm sorry it was so long. I didn't think to parse it properly first.
The motion carries 4 in favor with 1 absent.
Thank you, Jennifer. Okay, item 6C, that is on page 59 of the packet. Adoption of a resolution 41-2020 amending the 2021 fiscal year budget to include funding of not to exceed $80,000 for the FAR Department tax measure consulting services, which was previously approved on October 8th, 2019.
As stated in the staff submittal, this was really an oversight. It should have been, it was acted on separately by the board and should have been reflected in the final budget numbers as an item that was incomplete and the expense carried over to this fiscal year. There have been changes in what we're proposing to do in the scope of work for the tax measure, and now working through the JPA, the proposed fire JPA, and working with the county on a countywide measure, but there will still be the need for access to the services of SCI. We have them under contract. In the event that we, for some reason, do not move forward with the county, or the county does not move forward, or the other districts, this would still provide us the ability to be able to do what we need to do separately to make sure we get a measure on the ballot in June, because that's absolutely critical for our funding. And so basically I'm just asking for a restatement of what was approved last year that will amend this year's budget.
Okay.
I move to approve resolution 41-2020, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Groveland Community Services District amending the 2021 fiscal year budget to include funding of not to exceed $80,000 for the tax measure consulting services previously approved on October 8th, 2019.
I will second that motion.
Do we have any public comment? Any director comments? Okay, so it's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Kwiatkowski to adopt resolution 41-2020, amending the 2021 fiscal year budget to include funding to not exceed $80,000 for the fire department tax measure consulting services, which was previously approved on October 8th, 2019. And I'll call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong is absent. Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries 4 in favor, 1 absent.
Thank you. We will go on to item 6D, as in David, page 62 of the packet. Consideration of adopting a resolution 42-2020, accepting the CAL FIRE Volunteer Fire Assistant VFA grant in the amount of $549.98.
Okay, I'm going to look to Chief Murphy to help us out with this, or Chief Kasky, either one.
All right, this is Andy Murphy, again, your Assistant Fire Chief. Back in early spring, you may remember, we applied for the CAL FIRE Volunteer Fire Assistance Grant for some equipment. And this is through the 1978 United States Forest Service Cooperative Forestry Assistance Act, and CAL FIRE administers the grant for California. And we successfully again received the grant it's a 50-50 grant, and the total amount is basically $1,100. And the matching is $550. And we have set aside those funds in the budget in our equipment line item. And it's to purchase 5 wildland hose clamps for the firefighters there at Station 78. So we're very proud and honored to receive this grant again. And we're looking for the resolution. The state requires a resolution to be signed and the money to be acknowledged by the district. That's the end.
Thank you. Any comments by the directors? Any? Okay. I'd like to move to approve the resolution 42-2020, allowing the Groveland Community Service District to accept the volunteer fire assistant grant in the amount of $549.98 and authorizing the general manager to sign any subsequent documents pertaining to this grant.
I'll second that.
Do we have any comments from the members of the public or any of the persons who joined our meeting this morning?
This is Andy again. I just wanted to share that, you know, the staff there at the district fire station and I were always looking for additional grant opportunities. And while this is, you know, some may look at $550 as not a big deal, but it is a big deal. Every little bit helps. And this goes a long way to getting the folks equipment. And it also, you know, new equipment helps boost morale and it makes them more efficient and all those things. And so they're really good at looking out and finding grants. And we're going to continue to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, we appreciate all the help that we get from the actual fire department looking for these grants. And you guys have done a great job. Okay, Jennifer, I think we can call for the vote on this.
It has been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Mora to approve resolution 42-2020, allowing Groveland Community Services District to accept the volunteer fire assistance grant in the amount of $549.98 and authorizing the general manager to sign any subsequent documents pertaining to this grant. I'll call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong is absent. Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries 4 in favor with Director Armstrong absent.
Okay, moving to item 6E, that's page 78. Adoption of a resolution 43-2020 Cooperative Fire Protection Agreement Schedule A with the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection for the period of July 1st, 2020 to June 30th, 2023.
So I will briefly address this as well. In the staff submittal, I've outlined the fact that we did enter into the joint agreement with the county recently, and then it was determined that it would be most advantageous for both parties to have their own individual agreements with CAL FIRE. The district's agreement and relationship with CAL FIRE started back in 2012 when we lost our assessment funding and then moved into the immediate need for an arrangement with the fire department to keep the fire department going because we could not fund our own staff. And so we had the pleasure of working with the county through that. And have worked with that arrangement up until now. And it was basically a billing, accounting, procedural item to move these into separate agreements. The county has already approved their own agreement separately with CAL FIRE. And the terms and conditions and costs do not change from what we enjoyed with the arrangement through the county. So there are no changes by this action. One thing that I do want to clarify is that in discussions and in other agenda items and with this, entering into a three-year agreement is a big commitment. However, we've had an excellent relationship. The arrangement has worked very well with CAL FIRE. And they provided an excellent service and according to our master plan, an excellent value as well. The difficulty is that as we get out into future years, if we do not have a successful tax measure, we will deplete all of the funds available to pay the cost of this contract. If we are billed at 100% of the budgeted amount for both the Schedule A and the Amador agreement under this contract each year, we will, unless we have the funding through a new measure, we will barely be able to make it to the end of this three-year agreement, and we will have exhausted all of the funds that we have carried forward, last year being the first year that we actually had expenses exceeding revenue, when that will continue into the future. But at this point, we don't know whether there's going to be some contribution from either land projects, from arrangements with the county, or whether, you know, what the fire season is going to do as far as the Amador cost and all of that. So I'm going to estimate that we're going to be able to make it through these 3 years, even under the worst case scenario of not having the fire funding measure. So my recommendation stands that we approve this three-year agreement with CAL FIRE.
I agree. I don't want to be in a situation where we have to try to find. I'm glad I wasn't here when they had to find something, because we couldn't do it. So it's greatly appreciated to know that we've got a contract with CAL FIRE. Yes, Bob.
I fully support we voted for this already, but I noted, I have to reveal my own ignorance, having spent the time to actually read through the contract this time. We don't purchase whatever the correct term is, basic life support. And I'm a little surprised to know that, but I guess that's been the case.
Yeah, Bob, you're cutting out about every third word, and I think it's just the bandwidth.
Okay, I'll try it again. I'll try it again. I realized reading the contract this time that we box checked for basic life support, and if that is actually the case, I've been miss years.
So, Andy, can you address that question?
Yeah, so that box, so yes, the firefighters are trained in basic life support. They do provide basic life support and rescue. The box check indicates or requires them to be certified emergency medical technicians. So that being unchecked, they're not required to be, although I believe most of them, if not all of them, are. And I don't see Travis on here or Captain Chun anymore, but that's just a requirement, if checked, that they maintain that. And right now with the way it goes, that's optional. So they do still provide first aid and basic life support.
And
okay, thank you, Andy.
Sorry, I didn't mean to step on you there, Bob. It's no different from our prior agreement or the way that the county's agreement with CAL FIRE is styled either. It's identical, which I was a little bit surprised too, but I understand what Andy's saying.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we have EMTs in some cases, so I guess that's it. It's optional. I mean, we may get it or we may not on any given call, depending on. So thank you, Andy, that clarifies.
Certainly, and those are the different services that the state can contract or contract to, 1 through 9 there on the pages 3 and 4 of the agreement. So that's one of them.
Okay, thank you. Were there any other director comments? Okay, I would like to move to adopt resolution 43-2020, approving a cooperative fire protection agreement Schedule A with the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection for the period of July 1st, 2020 to June 30th, 2023.
I would like to second that motion.
Any comments from anyone attending the meeting today?
And I'd like to. I have one comment, which is this is not just the Schedule A agreement. This is also the Amador agreement. It's a collective agreement.
Well,
that's correct.
Okay. So we will change that Schedule A to read collective.
It's in the agreement itself. It
okay, so just the recommended action is incorrect. Okay, that's fine. Any comments? I'm sorry, Jennifer, anybody? Okay.
Okay, it's been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Edwards to adopt Resolution 43-2020, approving a cooperative fire protection agreement with the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection for the period of July 1, 2020 to June 30th, 2023. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong is absent. Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries with 4 in favor and 1 absent.
Thank you. We will move on to item 6F. And that's on page 114. And I have that here. Where'd it go? Authorize district staff to coordinate with Tuolumne County in a future application to the FEMA Building Infrastructure and Communities, BRIC, grant program for funding the equipment for the Community Emergency Response Team, CERT, fire, fuel breaks, and communication infrastructure development.
Yeah, this is another one of those evolving situations because there are a lot of moving parts. We've got the CERT program that has their input throughout the county into a potential application through this program. We also have the county that's been doing a significant amount of planning over the last few years in hazard mitigation opportunities. And then we have real-time experience recently as well. And there is a real opportunity through this program to accomplish some big things. The difficult thing is the timeline for these applications. We have until the 18th under this program to submit a notice of intent, which is basically a short version application form, budget, describes what work would be done, who's responsible. And that is something that we're currently working through the details with the county to determine if we can meet this deadline. And if so, what does that application look like? What are we including? Again, because we've got a lot of moving parts. One of the things that has come up this week that looks like a potential item for this grant that would be a big benefit also in Groveland would be a potential connection of the interconnection hub, the permanent interconnection hub at the park through and along the railroad grade connecting Caltrans, connecting the district office and the resilience center to that interconnection hub so that when we lose power during a PSPS or power shutdown where they can get the generators in there, that will have power to critical facilities at the same, that requires underground electric. In other words, we'd have to connect in to that grid that they can close. And that would be normally at our collective expense. That's on top of that route also is the proposed trail to be funded under Prop 68, but also because of its width and site distance and paved area would be able to serve as an alternate exit route out of PML, possibly all the way to Deer Flat Road, and would be removable bollards in place, which are They go into the ground and you can remove those, and then they could flow potentially one-way traffic this way and then the other way on Ferretti Road. Or it could be access for equipment only, whatever it may be. So there's a lot of benefits to this whole project and the relationship, the power, the emergency access and egress, as well as setting up for the future of the trail, which would be another funding source. Communication, I'm not sure if we're far enough along in anything. We've talked a little bit about if there was any way to enhance the communication infrastructure, either through hardening of some sort, putting things underground, putting things in a material where they're not going to burn so readily, those types of things, so that we can make sure we've got some form of a backup power supply and protected reliability for communication, both data and voice, and potentially radio. So we're working through those details. There are a number of fuel breaks that can be enhanced and additional ones built that would have been a big benefit had the fire come up the ridge from the Mock Fire. And so those are things that we would throw into the mix on this. And if we can make it in, we do have some county folks on the line as well. If we can make it in, we'd really like to get a notice of intent in. And then we have until January to submit the actual application. So the notice of intent goes in. If the state is prepared to work with us, finds this a viable project, feels we'll meet the cost benefit, then we can, we'll move into the application phase, which is due in January. So input from the board, I don't have all the components worked out at this point. Anything we do, there's gonna be some local contribution in time and effort and money to make these things happen. But in the event that we authorize to proceed with a notice of intent, and if we're requested to submit an application, we'll be finalizing budget numbers and project components so that you'll have a better handle on what we might be submitting. In the event that we're not going to financially be able to take it on, we wouldn't submit at that point.
I think it's a wonderful idea, and thank you, Pete, for bringing it to our attention, and thank you, the county, for all the work you're doing on this. Do we have any other director comments? Okay, I move to authorize the district staff to coordinate with the Tuolumne County in a request to submit an application to the FEMA Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities BRIC grant program for funding for equipment for the Community Emergency Response Team CERT and Communications Infrastructure Development.
I'll second that.
Okay, do we have any comments from anyone that's joined our meeting today?
I don't know if Liz has anything to add. I know we worked on this yesterday. When I say Liz, I mean Liz Peterson from the county. I know she's in attendance, but if not, I saw their mute come off, so possibly.
Yeah, no, nothing to add, Pete. Happy to continue to work together.
Thank you.
Okay. It has been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Swan, to authorize district staff to coordinate with Tuolumne County in a request to submit an application to the FEMA Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities Grant Program for funding for equipment for the Community Emergency Response Team and Communication Infrastructure Development. We'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong is absent. Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries 4 in favor with 1 absent.
Okay, item 6G, that's page 126. Consideration of the options to preserve excellent fire and emergency response services provided consistent with the adopted deployment standards within the district boundaries, including the potential discontinuation of emergency response services outside of the approved Tuolumne County Fire Service Providers Automatic Aid Mutual Aid Agreement, GCSD Fire Response Area.
Okay, does anyone else want to take this one on? That was supposed to be kind of a funny, but
I thought it was funny.
an extremely complicated matter, and I've addressed quite a few points related to this in prior agenda discussions today and in prior discussions with this board. The main thing is looking at the evaluation that we did within the master plan and identifying some of the weaknesses that we have within the fire department, we need to develop a plan for action into the future, okay? And that comes at all levels. That affects our planning for funding, our logistical planning within the department and station locations, land use planning responses, all of that comes into play in this discussion. And it's all driven by data, where the calls occur, what they are, how long they take, who has to respond, how complex, how dangerous, how, you know, everything. There's so many different factors and variable, and they range from, potential injury to a foot in a remote location that you can only access by foot after you've driven 30 miles, to a vehicle accident, to multi-vehicle accidents, to dangerous conditions, to a call to help lift someone out of bed. Very, very significant wide range of services that are provided by our fire department. What the staff report attempts to do is to additionally describe this and the responses that we make. And in a minute, I'm going to go into our GIS system and share that screen so that we can look at this a little bit graphically. But as stated in the staff report, we have responses pretty much from the boundary of Union National Park all the way to the Moccasin area, a variety of calls. And I've copied a few of the tables and graphs out of the master plan and pasted those into this just for the purpose of graphical understanding. One thing that we've definitely recognized, and Andy can definitely confirm the thoughts on this, is that our data can be improved. The way that the calls are reported in the CAD system, computer aided design, or computer aided documentation, I'm not sure in this case, but the way that the calls are reported in that system are not necessarily conducive to really evaluating what went on. We're noticing that in many cases, the data shows that we responded to, a call that was 30 miles away and the total time was 39 seconds on that call. Or that our average call inside the district of the 1,500 calls within the master plan we completed the call within 7.5 minutes. And that data is just not correct when you look at it in total. I could just tell you that there are technology means and software means that I think we should seriously look at to get that data together so we really know exactly what is happening. Not necessarily to time the engine as it goes out, and how quickly somebody gets out of bed. That's a given, they're getting there. It's just that, we need to know more data so we can make management decisions about equipment and resources and where the demands are increasing. When you look at the chart of all incidents, and this was provided by CAL FIRE, the numbers from back in 2004 are increasing. The overall total number of calls, and again, this is not just fire, this is everything that that rings in 911 that's related, that we would typically respond to. Many of those calls might be false alarms, they might get canceled, but somebody responds to that number, and you can see they've gone up from, you know, 500 calls to over 700 calls in that period of 15 years. And those calls are responded to out of both our station and the what we call the B station or the CAL FIRE station on Merrill Road. The master plan further, based on the data that was provided, shows that 11.8% of the calls go outside the boundaries, but that comprises over 37% of the time. Okay. Again, that data needs to be completely understood and verified, but that's a significant number of amount of time that potentially we could be low, if not out of resources in the district boundaries, if we're responding a long way. There's a higher risk of not having adequate resources available to even fight a small fire when we are a long way out of the district boundaries. And so then the staff report goes on to look at the ratio of fire, EMS, and other calls. Even though EMS wasn't checked in the contract, you can see that a majority of the calls are medical related. And that is the trend everywhere that I've talked to people. So that, you know, lower number of fire calls, and that's because people have replaced their electrical. They've got alarms. They have good practices and a good understanding of fire safety. Inspections, burn permit 4290, all of those things have come into play to reduce that fire call number. The other calls are interesting to learn about. In evaluating this data, I found that in the year 2016, the calls were 305 other calls, which made it look like our total calls were going down. But that of that 305 other calls, 50 of those were public assist for a single address. That's significant. And then after that year, that number reduced down to just a couple the following year at that address, and then there haven't been any since then. I don't have any data on what that was, but that's just to give you an example of how those numbers, even though in some cases they may appear to go down, they're not, the nature of the call is just changing. Some of those calls, the public assist calls, were two in a day. If that person didn't have assistance, I don't know what the situation was, but if we were on a very remote call and didn't have anybody available, I'm not sure what the status would have been of that person that was calling twice a day. So also the staff report details out that because of the other departments being quite a distance away, we're not expecting, and we do not receive a lot of physical mutual aid and engines responding to cover for us when we go out. So that's another compounded concern there. So what I'm gonna do right now is I'm gonna share my screen, and I'm gonna make sure that everybody has an opportunity to see it and can see it, and puts it on, I don't know whether speaker view or exactly what you put it on to be able to see it best. I'll look for a thumbs up from everybody when they can actually see it. Bob, you okay? You still working on it?
Bob Swan, thumbs up.
I think Bob Swan's frozen.
Okay, I'm going to assume that he can see it.
Can you hear me?
Yes, thanks, Bob. Okay.
I was giving you a thumbs up, but apparently I'm not. I'm having some sort of strange.
Yeah, it's just, you may want to try turning your video off and seeing if your voice carries, you'll still be able to see. You just, we can't see you, and sometimes that helps with bandwidth. It's not on our end. It's in your pipeline. So, you still there, Bob?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we'll hope that improves it. Okay, so I want to acclimate you to this map real quick. It's a very important tool that I've become very familiar with. This is our graphical display GIS system that we use, and we started off using it for water and sewer line location. And in wanting to get an understanding of the data related to calls, locations, and types.
You should see this map.
What's that?
I'm sorry.
All right, can everyone else just mute? I'll look back and see if we have comments. Okay. In order to be able to analyze the location of the calls, because when there's so many calls and so much data, it's hard to visually see what's occurring. And so it was very helpful for me with our relationship with CalCAD to be able to provide them a spreadsheet. And within a couple days, they had all of the locations plotted. These are all the 911 calls for 2016, 17, and 18 that are included in the master plan and that we responded to. And also 2019 data is just the calls outside. We have not yet plugged in the calls inside the boundaries of the district. When you look at the map, you could see the red line, the red outline is the statutory district boundaries. Goldish yellow areas are the automatic mutual aid boundary. N4A and N5 are outside the district boundaries, but areas that we respond automatically under the mutual aid agreement. And then we also respond further out to other areas. And let me zoom out a little bit further. You can see here, these are further out the 120 corridor. Out toward Yosemite National Park. And one thing about our ability to be able to use this data is, hang on a second, let me select it. I can highlight that area and it will give me the total number of calls logged in that area by year, 2016, 2017, 18, and 19. And so they tell me, the location, it's not always an exact perfect address location, but they do give coordinates, longitude and latitude that allows them to be able to plot the points. So you can see there were 15 plus 12 plus 9 plus 1 calls out in that vicinity outside of the boundaries of the district and the mutual aid within that four-year period of time. And that's what the subject was of the evaluation that the EIR consultant did for the Terra V project. They looked at those the calls outside the district boundaries. So when you zoom in on these, for example, one of the further out, and let me just tell you, the primary colors are green and purple. Green is medical, purple is collision with medical. Okay, so these are, this just gives you the information about the length of time in many cases, as you can see. One of them was an hour and 30 minutes. The other one was 3 minutes and 4 seconds. So that's where we're having some of the anomalies with the data that we've got is all in the time for those things. But, you know that Evergreen Lodge is an hour away from the station. So it takes 2 hours round trip plus whatever time they have on site. This, the again, the the green and purple being the majority of the calls. We have the same when we look at outside the district boundaries on the other end, on the grade. We have a number of calls there. Red is fire. And as you can see, this is predominantly traffic related because of the purple. And then fire, obviously there were a couple of fires in that location. And I'll select that data just because it looks like there's only five or six, but in reality, there's a number of those in each location. For example, here on those, if we zoomed in, we've got 12 on 16, 11 on 17, 12 calls on 18 and 12 on 19. Long and short is we've got a great way of evaluating this data and getting an understanding of where we're having a draw on the resources. This is also this N5 zone. We've got a high number of calls outside there. And one of the concerns is obviously when we're out in this location, I can put this on hybrid, just so you can see what those are. But we got a lot of calls in some areas. Now to get out to these locations for all these medical calls, we're not going to be able to respond to Big Oak Flat very quickly, and that's a big concern. So again, that is the reason that we're talking about going with an additionally staffed engine at our station, so that when we do send the resources out here and they are out here for a period of time, that we still have a fully staffed engine left behind at home in the station. So again, there's quite a few calls out here. And these folks, again, are not, here we got 20, 25, 25, and 18 outside the boundaries over the years. They're not contributing toward the fire department and there's no one else to respond. So, anybody want to know anything more about this graphical tool, or I'll move back to the staff report. I don't have a lot of eyes on me right now. I have a lot of missing people. I will go ahead and stop sharing and go back. The purpose of that was just to make light of why we're looking at what we are. There are really only a couple of solidly viable options that we can stand on and say we are guaranteed to have someone in the station available to respond within our 14 minute standard. And that is to either not respond to areas that are that far away or to increase the staffing so that we have enough people to make sure that we have somebody left behind in a vehicle to be able to respond. And so that is there are other options. Andy alluded to move up and cover, bring people up the hill when we go out, those kind of things. But in many cases, those, especially in a situation like we're in now, are if and when available, and also the time required to move them up. And if they get a call while they're moving up, they're coming out, somebody else is moving in, somebody else is moving up. And you have these increasing risk factors. So operationally, go ahead, Janice, sorry.
I would like to know what is the county has to have, like we have a 14 minute response time that we try to get to all calls. If all the engines in Groveland are busy within our boundaries, what is the county's responsibility? What what time do they put on a call that's out here when there isn't anybody else up here that can go out there? I mean, they've got a responsibility to provide service to people. That's county, that's a county area. So what is the county's plan if there isn't any Groveland trucks available?
Andy, I don't mean to put you on the spot. I just don't know exactly logistically how to.
Hey, Pete, this is Nick Cashy. Can I comment?
Yeah, absolutely.
So operationally, we are always looking at what is the best coverage for the county in filling those gaps. So our command center looks at the commitment of resources and the empty stations and then moves resources appropriately. We don't have an automatic cover plan right now. However, that doesn't mean we can't. So I'd like to bring a couple things into perspective really quick regarding the situation. And it's not from a standpoint to comment on a long-term solution, as I believe that dialogue should be between the county and the GCSD, but it's to offer you an option in the short term that is not leaving the automatic aid agreement. And the reason for that is this, is that agreement is the standard for the county in what's best for the public and what also ensures that firefighter safety, that we have resources automatically coming to support our crews in the Groveland area should we have an incident that's bigger than one engine can handle. If we don't participate in that, it'll be the first time that CAL FIRE will be put in a very hard spot in the sense that it'll be outside of what our values and our mission are. However, we're still stewards of the program. So what I'd like to offer you is if we're looking at a time commitment issue of outside the district boundary, CAL FIRE has two engine staff there on the state at the cost to the state at a minimum from May 15th or April 15th now through November 15th. We'll be happy through the auto aid agreement to pick up the calls outside of the GCSD with the state engines on the state dime with a response plans change that will keep the GCSD engine there. From that point, we're really kind of narrowed down to the time of the year where the GCSD pays one third of the personnel cost plus some of the utilities for the Amador engine and addressing the calls that are outside the GCSD response area during that time period. There's other things we can do to complement that with an automatic move up and cover. And you are correct. It's going to extend the ability to get a resources, but geographically we can't get around that in the Groveland area. So these things that I'm offering to you are short-term items that the state as a partner and as a steward of your program can provide during the time that the long-term fix is being addressed between the county and GCSD. And I just wanted to get that out there to the group that we do have some options to ensure that you guys are covered. And also the fact that some of those calls outside GCSD's boundaries, those could be your own residents that are traveling that are involved in a vehicle accident. I don't think I could support the stance that we wouldn't send a response there when it could be one of your own constituents that is paying for that service. It could be on the receiving end. So I apologize for the long diatribe there, but I'm really passionate about this in finding a solution with whatever I can bring from the state side to ensure that we have what's right for not only our cooperators, but for the people that live in the Groveland area.
Yeah, very, very much appreciated. You know, I mean, that's I'm passionate about it as well, Chief. I can tell you in my nearing 30-year career managing special districts and half of that with managing fire departments as well, this is probably the most difficult decision that I've been faced with and Groveland CSD didn't put itself in this position. It just is a change in the situation, a change in the call nature, a change in the development of the region, the effect on volunteer fire departments, the fire hazard increases, everything kind of, like you talked about perfect storm before, And so we're passionate about coming up with a solution on this because we want to make it happen. You know, it's just when I know that there are times when we don't have the staffing at the station, that even at, you know, at the B station, and that we could be left with waiting for a response from afar because stuff is hitting the fan. It, you know, it's hard to look someone in the eye that is a taxpayer within the district and say, we've got you covered. You know, we've identified some gaps even when we are staffed in our ability to be able to deal with larger incidents. We just haven't, luckily we haven't seen a lot of them, you know. And so we're just trying to prepare for the future, plug holes for things in the future, but at the same time, guarantee our taxpayers to the best that we can that we're there for them and we'll provide services. So appreciate anything you can do on that end to, with the response plans.
I want to comment just real quickly on Chief Catch's comment regarding the Groveland residents going up country to play. There is over 1 million people that go through that entrance to Yosemite annually, and they are not, the majority of them are not Groveland residents. So there is the county's response for a lot of people. So a lot, you know, and to not see a fire department between Groveland and the gates of Yosemite is ridiculous. So I'm sorry.
Ma'am, this is Nick Cash. I just want to clarify something. I'm not justifying that the response gap that we have is okay. And I'm not justifying that it should be on the GCSD's shoulders to respond there. I'm solely coming from a perspective that right now, as the unit chief for TCU and also the stewards of your program, I'm trying to offer resources that will keep us all on the same page with the AutoAid agreement versus becoming a standalone non-participative agency. So by no means does what I'm trying to address have anything to do with the validity of the issue, because it is valid. But what it can do is keep us on the same page at something that hopefully will be outside of the cost of the district, so that we can all maintain that same continuity of operations through the AutoAid agreement, which was a huge leap going forward and all agencies committing to help each other. So I just want to make sure that I didn't misrepresent in regards to that. I'm trying to find a solution that will may not be the best option, but it's what I can offer now during the time in which a long-term solution is figured out. So that's the only thing I'm throwing out there.
This is Bob. We appreciate that. And, you know, the notion of having the B station respond first to areas in the auto A, if I understood what you were proposing, that you might be able to respond to calls from the automatic aid area first, thereby leaving the Groveland truck available, is a good, I mean, that's a short-term thing, but it's a good thing. It would be useful if I understood that correctly. What we've seen from this analysis, and I mean, we've seen this now for a few months since we started getting data in, is that while there's a time issue that we have to evaluate, in terms of number of calls, the things that actually are burdening us a lot are calls within the automatic aid zone. You know, things like places like Yosemite Vista or Prospect Heights, depending on what you want to call it. We get a lot of medical calls from there. And you know, the long-term issue, it's a matter with having to work with the county to figure out how to get some support for that, because as Pete has pointed out, and as we've gone through at great length already, we're going to run out of money. I mean, pretty soon, if we don't figure out a way to cover our expenses, there won't be a Groveland Fire Department, and then everybody's.
I think you finished up, Bob. It cut you off at the last word when you said.
Oh, sorry, I hung up. I was done. That's all I had to say.
Okay, thank you.
Bob Asquith has had his hand up a couple times.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind everybody we're against the backdrop of where the permanent resident sales of homes have gone way up here by a factor of five. And we should be thinking down the line relative to having a lot more local service because people will be moving up here.
Thank you, Chief Catchy, for your comment regarding my comment. Yes, we've got no property within Pine Mountain Lake that is for sale. That's unusual. It's a lot of it's due to the COVID restrictions. People are moving up here, not just full-time, but those were homes that were just vacant rental homes that maybe the owner came up once a month during the summer. Everything is full. There is nothing in Groveland that can be rented at this time or purchased. So, you know, our constituency may not have changed because our hookups are the same, but we still are now providing services for a lot more people locally. So I would, you know, we definitely want to keep everything going with CAL FIRE and having that station down the road take all the calls out of the boundaries when possible is wonderful, but I would like to know what the county has to say. Yes, Spencer, you have your hand.
And I think that's a valid point, Janice. One member of our community that's conspicuously absent from this meeting is the county. As a former firefighter here and a long-term resident of Pine Mountain Lake, I see the population growing as just more people, as you were saying. What's the right answer? I mean, the right answer is not to close the Groveland Fire Department. That is not what we want to do. And to not respond to calls. There's not a firefighter in a pair of boots that doesn't want to respond to every call that he or she gets. We all want to respond to every call we hear about. I mean, that's just kind of the nature of the person that becomes a firefighter. The CAL FIRE chief has been offering some great solutions, and those are greatly appreciated. GCSD is just pulling its hair out trying to find out how we can go without closing our fire department. And we're it from the bottom of the grade to the entrance to the park and everything in between. The Forest Service doesn't respond to medical aids. We do. And we want to, because that's what firefighters do. But how do we keep doing it? Where's the funding going to come from? How do we keep doing it? And that's what Pete has been working so hard on and bringing to us relative solutions and real solutions, but they all cost money that the district doesn't have to pay. I'm concerned, really, really concerned that in 3 years there won't be a Groveland Fire Department. All that good paint job will go to waste. But I am, and just to inject a little humor into a very serious situation, because there's a lot of people up here that are my age and older that depend on medical emergency response. I'm very concerned about this whole thing.
Before we move too far out, Spence, I do want to let you know, and you may not know, that the Tuolumne County that you see on the screen, and they've got their hand up, they'll want to address it. They have five of their administrative personnel and emergency services folks that are in the Tuolumne County office is attending this meeting since the beginning. So they are, the administration is participating. Our supervisor-elect, Kathleen Half, was on, unfortunately, knew in advance that she was going to have to leave at noon And I've committed to get her up to speed. She really wanted to be here for the entire thing. Those particular people were there. I see that the county's had their hand raised for a while since you called on them, Janice. So can we have them speak?
Thank you for straightening me out on that, Pete. And I appreciate that very much. And I look forward to some input and some help from Tuolumne County.
I am muted. Yep. All right. Hi there. This is Tracy Riggs. I'm the County Administrator, and thank you for allowing us the time to talk and to participate in this meeting. So as Pete knows, this is a conversation that has been going on between he and I and some of our staff for some time. I'm equally, and so is the board, share the concerns that your board has. But this is not something that's obviously going to be solved today. So we are asking that you would allow us to continue the process of working with Pete and your board and our board towards some type of resolution. I don't have an answer for you today, only that we are equally concerned and realize that we need to see an increase in the number of all first responders along that corridor. I will say, though, that without the economic engine in place to make that happen, we will not be able to do that. So we just need to figure out what's the best path forward for everyone. And I'm committed to making that happen and working with Pete and my board and your board as we progress through this discussion.
Thank you, Tracy. Yes, of course, we will continue to work together to find something that's going to work, because we have to.
Thank you, ma'am, for that, and we look forward to being a cooperative board of directors. I hope I speak for all five of us. We just want to get this problem under control so that we can provide the services we promised to provide to the people who live in Groveland and the rest of the county that's along the 120 corridor. Thank you, ma'am.
I know Ronnie had her hand up at some point. I don't know if she wanted to speak.
Thank you, Jennifer. I just noticed the county representative had their hand up, and so I just wanted to point that out. But Pete covered that. Thanks.
Okay. Do we have any other comments from the directors at this time? I would like to make a motion. Where am I? 6G. Yeah, I'm sorry, H. I went too far.
At this point, Madam President, this was more of a consideration of options and continued discussion. And at this point, as Tracy Riggs alluded to, I mean, we're having really open, excellent communication with the county. There's absolutely no doubt that the good thing is when we talk about ultimate goals and alignment, we're at 100%. We meet right, we all want the same thing. Nobody's thinking, gosh, let's just save money or let's just make money and that's our total goal. It's we want to provide the service and we want to figure out a way to do it that's equitable and legal and responsible and everything else and forward thinking. So that's the beauty. And the county's got, a lot of people on the line. They've really put in a lot of time, not only today, but with me over the months. And I really think we are headed toward solutions that are going to work. So I don't necessarily, unless there's some specific board action, as long as there's agreement that we'll continue to work with the county and work towards solutions on this and recognize the dilemma and understand that, impact of new developments is going to be looked on very carefully, and we'll look for solutions to those to accommodate that economic engine at the same time that we don't have a resulting decrease in any services. So
Yes, I'd like to just say that we are, I'm sure all directors are in favor of continuing the cooperating with each other and resolving, hopefully coming to some kind of resolution eventually to figure out what we're going to do. And I think we can thank the county for being here to this, for sticking around for this one. I know it was far down the list, but we do appreciate you being here, taking part in this. Thank you very much. Do we want to, is there any public comments, Jennifer? Mm-mm. Okay, we have no resolution here. There's no action item. We are just going to continue and we will move on to the next item, please. Item H, page 152, report regarding application to Suquamish County LAFCO for an out-of-area water service agreement for the airport estates development in advance of the future annexation of the project.
This is a mainly an informational item because we don't know exactly where we are in this process yet. Moving forward, we have submitted I brought this to the attention of the board because we have submitted an application to LAFCO for the annexation of the airport estates. And are moving through that process. And that was the last action of our board. We had the annexation agreement and related other development agreements. But at this point, there is the need to upgrade the municipal service review for the district prior to LAFCO's action on the annexation. That could put us out many months. I don't know if Quincy's still on the line at the county and can give us any indication on that. But regardless, the municipal service review has to be done and the developers of the airport estates project have sold quite a few of their lots and really want to get connections so that these folks can, when they do build, if that does occur before annexation, they can actually have fire protection water for both construction and for fire sprinkler systems. But I see that.
Yeah, hi. This is Quincy Daly, Community Development Department Director. And yeah, just to echo Pete, we're working together on getting this out of agency service agreement processed. And in anticipation that an annexation would come later on. So it's on my desk and we're working on it.
Every day, seems like.
Okay, are there any other comments from the directors? Any comments from the directors? Any comments from the public? Well, I'm sorry, we'll go ahead and this is another non-action item?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
Unless the board has any direction on it, which...
You're doing fine, Pete. And we appreciate your help, Quincy Yaley, on this item. Okay, we'll move on to item I, page 153. Adoption of a resolution 44-2020 approving an amendment on the vehicle use policy to allow for modified conditions and use in the event of an emergency.
All right. They signed off. Yep. So I appreciate them.
Okay.
Okay, let me click on the right agenda item here. This is, we hadn't really thought about this before from the perspective of that we needed employees to be able to be accessible during the emergency, during the mock fire and during evacuations. And in order to be able to do that, they had to be able to take care of their family. And in many cases, there were family members spread in different locations. you know, you had the dogs going one way, you had the kids going another way, you had, people packing up and all kinds of work going on. And at the same time, we needed employees to show back up to work if they could. So in order to help facilitate that process during an emergency, we realized that I don't have any policy direction on employees being able to use vehicles so that, number one, they can be identified as a district employee when they have to go in and out of an evacuation area. And also, number two, to be able to more simply not have to switch vehicles and try to accommodate family needs in many cases, which would create delays in response or potentially inability to respond to the district needs. So this policy would allow, under emergency conditions, for myself to have employees that were going to be working take the vehicle, use that for district purposes to respond to and from work when we're evacuated or in an emergency, and also limited incidental personal use. I mean, it's not their primary vehicle to go out of town and go to Modesto to go to Costco and come back. It's if they've got to go to the grocery store on the way up here to work or on the way back, or if their wife is stuck somewhere else and can't move the kids, can't get them to where they need to be at grandma's house, and that's a reasonable travel distance, and that we would allow them to be able to transport family members in that vehicle during that time as well. Our insurance would cover it. It's not a normal practice on a day-to-day basis. You can imagine the calls that we would or might get if the kids and the wife and the dog were all in a vehicle driving around during a normal, sunny, non-emergency day. That's not what this is intended for. This is a provision only under emergency conditions.
This is Bob. I'm just going to stick this in here. I fully support the movement here, but the grammar in this, you got to fix the grammar. This reads, you don't use an apostrophe to make something be a plural. The thing needs to read a little better than this before you publish.
Okay. In the single modified paragraph, the red and blue.
Yes, in the red and blue section. You don't, employees doesn't take an apostrophe in that case.
Need,
there's at least a couple of places where you need some conjunction.
Yep. Okay, we will absolutely work that out. I love the Zoom meetings where you look down and somebody's got their picture. I look down at Rachel and she's got constantly a big, huge smile that just stays there all the time on her picture.
Well, that's whether it's her picture or her actual living face.
I know.
No. yes. Okay, so we have any other comments from any other directors? Okay,
That said, I'll move to adopt Resolution 44-2020, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Groveland Community Services District approving an amendment to the vehicle use policy to allow for modified conditions and uses in the event of an emergency with better grammar.
And I second that motion.
Okay, are there any comments from the public at this time? No? Okay. Call for the vote, Jennifer.
Hey, it has been moved by Director Swan and seconded by Director Edwards to approve Resolution 44-2020, an amendment to the vehicle use policy to allow for modified conditions and uses in the event of an emergency with the grammatical error fixes. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong is absent. Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries 4 in favor with 1 absent.
Item J, page 160, report from the general manager and park ad hoc committee regarding the status of the Hetch Hetchy Trail project and approval of the park amenities request for proposals.
Who wants to do this one? I mean, if someone else wants to take it.
I can read it. Do you mean to read?
No, I just, I mean, I can summarize it really quickly. I just, I seem to be talking out. I don't want to put anybody to sleep. This is a fun project, though. This is something that we have been working on relatively consistently and recently met with the park committee about. First off, I'll address the trail project. We had a meeting, follow-up meeting with Hetch Hetchy, related to the potential funding source or and assistance, professional assistance through their community benefit programs that they have, and Bob Asquith is very familiar with those or requests for those. Good meeting with them. We're going to be submitting to them a description of the project that they can then use to be able to see if they've got consultants that are specialized in engineering, surveying, and all that that can help us out up front at their expense. They have that built into their contract with their consultants and contractors. And also whether they have some funding to be able to put into the project for some of our initial expenses in getting us prepared for grant applications. So excellent cooperation on their part to this point. They are a very vast organization that doesn't always internally communicate very well. So we have to stay with it and stay focused with them, but we've got requests in that we'll finalize, and hopefully they are definitely looking to move forward with an initial memorandum of an understanding, and that would outline the responsibilities. If a trail were to be built, who would be responsible and how that would all work. They would absolutely love to participate in this project and help us out. We want to build it. So that's pretty much it on the trail project. And then I've been driving everybody crazy on the, you know, Rachel did a fantastic job of getting consultants engaged that want to help us with evaluating the existing amenities in the park, and at the same time look at participating in the design of future improvements there. And she rattled the bell enough that enough people were interested that she and Jen worked together and presented a request for proposals to the committee that is now out on the street in the form that you see in the packet. And we wanted to make sure that the board was on track with that, because it could come back and will likely come back with a budget that is more than we had expected, just because as we wrote this down, it became more complex, the challenge that we have to have them do in order to get prepared for good projects, well thought out projects, and a good grant application. So I'll let any of, you know, Rachel or Jen or the committee members add anything to that.
I'll just speak, and then Rachel, if you'd like to add on, then feel free to. But yeah, a lot of work. So like Pete said, with the park stuff and with the RFP that went out, a lot of really good engagement with some of the potential consultants to put together. You know, this is a really ambiguous kind of RFP. They have a lot of questions because it's not very, you know, it's kind of like, well, we don't really know what we're doing, but this is kind of like what we're looking for, but we're kind of looking for you to tell us what we're trying to tell you, what we need. And it's been really fun talking to, you know, some of the consultants, especially one in particular, because, you know, we have obviously very obvious financial constraints as far as it goes
with our parks and recreation. We don't have a lot of money, but we have a gem of a park, and we have a lot of grant opportunities right now to fund some type of new facilities there. And so people tend to be very excited just because this is, you know, our park system is not like what the majority of these projects they work on. The majority of the projects they work on are in urban areas. They're the same old, all the time. And so we're really a challenge, but an exciting one. And so we're waiting to get hopefully at least a couple proposals back that will really assist with kind of the vision of a park master plan, what is feasible as far as new development there, as well as some help and resources for the actual grant writing for these. So that's a big one for us because, you know, honestly, the district, we don't have the staff, we don't have the ability, we really need to outsource pretty much the majority of all of this. So that's kind of where that stands. So we're looking forward to getting those back. And then like Pete touched upon and then the Hetchy Trail is obviously part of this, but we have the element of San Francisco or SFPUC that we've been working with. And the meeting that we had earlier this week was really exciting because of a lot of stuff that we need with regard to engineering and studies are what a lot of the consultants that they contract with do. As far as just helping us to be able to, when we go to submit stuff for grants, there's a lot of that information that needs to be included. So it's headed in a really positive direction. It's a really big, it's just kind of huge right now. Conceptually, it's just all over the place. And we're really trying to fine tune that down to get a clear direction and vision of where we want to go and then how we fund that. So it's been exciting.
After attending these meetings, it is really exciting. And you get excited when you get any information regarding the park because it's just, I know we all like it tremendously, but Spence and I are kind of really over-passionate about it. And we thank you guys in the office and the staff for all the work. I know Rachel did a tremendous job contacting a few people to regarding the RFP, and some of their, they look like great companies, and I know one was referred by a local. She had reached out to some, I think Pete had reached out to a constituent here within Pine Mountain Lake who was retired from this type of business, and she referred us to the company, and they just all seem great. So I'm looking forward to hearing what their responses are and to getting some ideas written down by somebody that knows how to do it. So other than us and the members of the public and the school kids writing down what we'd like to see. So it's going to be exciting to move forward.
I will add just one of the, as far as, with the park committee and the work through Grace, one of the nice things is, we're kind of doing all this stuff and we're feeling like maybe sometimes we're making progress, but it's kind of not really spinning our wheels, but just talking to the consultants and letting, informing them of what we have done as far as community outreach and stuff. According to them, we're really well ahead of the game as far as for grant, applications and what we've done. So they were very impressed with the amount of work that the district has been able to perform and get done on our own, which okay. They very beneficial and helpful. So
thank you, Ronnie. Thank you, Rachel. I was looking forward to the 49er Festival and having a booth down there again and all the things we had thought about. So darn it. Maybe we'll do one at the virtual 49er Festival.
It's encouraging to know that all that past effort is beneficial. It's good.
Yes, very much.
As not a member of the park committee or any of those things, I just wanted to make a remark that this is a really well-written request for proposal. Mm-hmm. So whoever or whatever group of people were involved in that. It's I think it's extremely good for what it's trying to do, especially considering the amount of uncertainty we have and what we're trying to get answers to.
I think Rachel has a big grin on her face. It's hard to tell. She's in the dark. Move forward a little bit, Rachel. Turn a light on. She did a lot of work on this.
She did a great job. It's a big project, and she did a fantastic job of getting all the thoughts together and making this what it is. And the plan was, if there are any recommended changes from the board, we can issue an addendum for the consultants. We still have time to get that out. I don't know, have we had to along the way so far? I know you've had communications with them, and I'm speaking to Rachel and Jen, but I mean, have we had to get any formal addendums out to clarify anything?
No, not other than the one that was already the first addendum that was made as far as the cost, and then, you know, relying a lot on district staff to provide things to keep that cost down. So okay. Not any additional.
That was one of the first things that consultants ask is, what's your budget for this? You know, and of course they want to hear $100,000, you know, and that's not the case. We were going off of, in our mind, going off of the proposal that we received from PlaceWorks, which was about 10,000, I think, or a little bit less. And so we know it's going to be much more than that. But anyway, the first addendum had them break down the budget by task so that we can step through it, and hopefully we can award the first step and then be successful in some grant money and keep moving forward with it. So.
Okay, so that sounds fun. I'd like to go ahead, Spence.
Yeah, I was going to say, I move to approve the park amenities request for proposals for the purpose of advertisement to consultants.
I'll second that motion. And is there anybody that would like to make comments? Any members of the public?
Let's see, me.
No hands, nothing going on, okay.
Okay, so it's been moved by Director Edwards and seconded by Director Kwiatkowski to approve the park amenities request for proposals for the purpose of advertisement to consultants. I will now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong is absent. Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries, 4 in favor with 1 absent.
Well, everybody.
Before you go to adjourn, I'd like to say something, if I may.
Sure.
I've been approached by a couple of people, constituents, and some of the things that they mentioned to me were brought up here today. One is so many no homes being for sale. Everything being full, many more people up here. There are people concerned about the lack of law enforcement in the Groveland Community Services District. Sheriff's Department hasn't got enough deputies to keep law enforcement here. Now, we're not the only ones who know that. The people who do bad things know that. And this is the way it was approached to me. It was brought to me. And I know that community service districts can provide law enforcement. Now, I'm not recommending it one way or another, but what I am doing is I'm bringing it to the attention of the board of directors that I have been approached by constituents concerned about law enforcement. I don't know how a community service district funds it. I don't know how it starts it. I don't know anything about it, other than the fact that the people who live in GCSD are concerned with the increase in population, the increase in law enforcement officers available, and law enforcement presence hasn't been keeping pace. So I'm bringing that to our attention, as I think a responsible director should when he's approached by, he or she is approached by constituents. And I'll leave it at that.
I agree 100%. There's all the, I don't know if everybody knows, but all the flags out in front of Marvell store were stolen the other night. Every American flag is missing, and they've got a couple of people on video that may have, they think may have done it, but just for everybody that lives within the area to know that there is no sheriff up here is kind of crazy. So, I mean,
it's food for thought for us, because we can provide law enforcement, yes. But I don't even know how to fund it or how to start that. Maybe no, people.
But I think maybe, as constituents, we need to contact the sheriff.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm just bringing it to the surface.
No, it's a good conversation, because it. I will bring it to the attention of the county in our discussions, because that is the reason, another reason for community facilities districts. That's what they do. I mean, if the county was thinking, they would be thinking about the need for funding an officer up here, you know, a substation and an officer, and that would be included in that community facilities district before it's too late, and then it's on everybody else.
Yes.
That's what it would be. But they're, you know, so that is going to be a push with the county at the supervisor level to recognize that they need to pass this cost on to developers. That period. And that's a political, that's a supervisor, you know.
I will say that there, a long, long, long time ago, like when I was in high school or something, there used to be a sheriff's substation, like at right where across the maintenance yard of Pine Mountain Lake, I think, from where our AWS is. And I can't remember how that was funded. I don't know if it was through the county and then they just got rid of it because of budget cuts, or if it was something that people within the community paid that they didn't want to pay any longer to fund. But like Pete was saying, I mean, that used to exist up here. And I just think, you know, coming from the conversations today, is, you know, with fire department services, you know, law enforcement services, the dynamic in this part of the county is changing like drastically and very, very, very quickly at a rapid pace. And it's, you know, it's kind of scary really, because there's a lot of stuff going on here, and the limited, like we all know, this area was never intended, and Pine Mountain Lake was never intended to be what it is. And people about these develops, and we're very unprepared for the kind of growth and the kind of change that has occurred so quickly and rapidly. And anyways, it's definitely something that, you know, we are addressing, we need to address, and I don't know the answer, but it's just, it's coming really prevalent in a lot of different things.
Do they have a substation in Jamestown?
I don't know.
I know they do, but I don't know who mans it. If it's the
they used to. I don't think they have one now.
Okay.
I do know if there's something that needs to be done. Right. It is my opinion that this board of directors and this leadership staff at the district are the ones that can do it.
Absolutely.
I do believe that.
Let's just add more to Pete's plate.
I was going to say, I just hear see Pete like.
You know what? That's why I'm such a community services district advocate. You want trash service, you got it. You want broadband service, you got it. You know, a menu. If you want police service, you got it. It's just a matter of, you know, how you get it funded.
Right.
Give me the money.
You know, and that's, you know, police is as expensive as long or as.
But isn't that not our concern? I mean, if we would take it upon ourselves, yeah, that'd be our concern. But isn't it the county's concern?
That is their, yes. However, they're not required to provide any particular level of service. If this level of service that they provide is for the entire county, then that's what it is. If we want a higher level of service, we have the ability to be able to do that and fund it and, you know, and get some funding from the county so that they don't have to provide that service anymore. We'd likely contract with the sheriff anyway.
Yes. Okay.
Whatever direction, whatever, I certainly agree with Spence that that's a major issue, or with everybody. I just want to register my opinion that as we proceed, I think we should find ways to make this work with the sheriff's department as opposed to starting the GCSD police force. Because while you can do that, the liability implications, among other things, are extremely twitchy. And so we already got a sheriff's department. The trick part is to figure out how to get permanent, you know, get a permanent presence up here, either by contracting with them or finding a funding measure that we can support with them to, you know, have that guarantee. But I we want to think really carefully before we decide to become the GC.
Well, what is the new space group called? If we can have a space force, we can have a police force.
Hey, I think this is a valid item for consideration on an upcoming agenda, not for us to, not necessarily, you know, specifically for us to become our own police force or to contract with the sheriff or any of that, but it's certainly within our jurisdiction to take some form of action to recommend that the county include that in their law enforcement plans, that there have been changes in the dynamic, changes in the needs and safety of the public in Groveland, you know, and certainly in any of the isolated communities in the county, and that that should be taken up in terms of, you know, making sure that development projects and everything else contribute into that in some way, you know?
Yes.
Granted, we've only been up here for 4 years, but I have never once seen a sheriff's car anywhere on any Pine Mountain Lake road that I've ever been driving on. Not once.
Yeah, and you'll know they will not show up for, unless somebody says, like, you know, they're in their house and they're gonna kill me, they won't show up for hours because they don't have resources either.
Right.
And they stayed, you know, and they have obviously a lot more going on down the hill, and we're way out of the way, and it's kind of, you know, we're the last thought when they can get up to us. So, I mean, it's a very, very inadequate service for sure.
Yeah, if they're patrolling in Groveland, if that was their patrol, what happens? It's just like us being out at Evergreen Lodge.
Right.
Fire department. If they're patrolling, then one of four is not able to get to Miwok in time, you know, or wherever they're going, you know. I mean, it's a subject of future planning. I think this board, it would be powerful for the board to facilitate that discussion.
Okay.
Nothing else.
And like, that's a valid point, Pete, because although we see the things that are happening here and the stuff that people post on, you know, social media, that this house is broken into and this person did this and that, blah, blah, blah. But then if you follow the Tuolumne County Sheriff's feed, you also see 10 times that from, you know.
Yeah. Murder for hire. Yeah. That's the newest one.
What was that?
They got a tip from the FBI that there was a nurse in the ICE that worked at the ICU unit in Sonora that she had contracted murder for hire, so they arrested her the other day. See all the stuff you're missing, Ronnie?
Anyways, well, I think we're digressing a little bit off of that.
Yes, thank you very much. Okay, thanks to everybody for attending. We are adjourning the meeting now. Thank you.
Good meeting. Well done, Pete. Good meeting, sir. And Rachel?
Yes, all those items in 3 hours.